This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Sean Stevens is the Chief Research Advisor for the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, FIRE. 2025 set a new record for attempts to silence speech. Not good. And he joins us now here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Sean, how are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. First of all, FIRE's right in our town, but for those who don't know, it at one point was the Foundation for Individual Rights and Education. You guys expanded the mission. So give us the overview of what the mission is today.
The mission is we protect the free speech rights of all Americans. If the speech is protected by the First Amendment, we'll defend it, no questions asked. We still have a very strong presence, interest, and place a lot of value on speech on college campuses and universities. It's where we got our start. But yeah, as you mentioned, in 2022, we expanded that to include everybody.
All right, so 2025 was not a great year for the First Amendment.
No. No, it was not. You're referencing our press release, and we had another brief post go up last week on the record number of attempts, or this week on the record number of attempts to sanction student speech this year. That's tracked in our Students Under Fire database. It goes back to 2020. There's a little over 1,300 entries in total in there, and about 275 of them come from this year. I'll emphasize that we are aware that that's an undercount due to having we have knowledge of other incidents that haven't been made public, et cetera. So we're kind of, the problem's worse.
And like, for example, give us some of the examples of where these violations have occurred.
Yeah, I mean, they span the spectrum. You've got student organizations and student groups that get sanctioned for inviting speakers to campus, or they're denied recognition in many cases due to politics, their perceived politics. And it is often a case of viewpoint discrimination, or at least looks like it to us.
Like the college will say to a speaker, you can't have a speaker, that particular speaker, come, or a campus group will block that speaker from coming to college, for example.
Okay. Student government will, at a lot of places, will attempt to block specific speakers who have certain politics. Universities that are strong on speech kind of overrule that and explain to the student government that they can't do that. Other instances, other universities may not do that, and or administrators, instead of the student government, they won't just come out and flat out say it, right? They won't just say it's because of your politics, but they'll give some kind of vague reference to security concerns, or they'll slap high security fees on a lot of times in a way of kind of like pretextually, you know, making it hard to put the event on, and it could wind up censoring the event. And then they won't do this to speakers who have different politics and different views.
Okay. When that happens and you guys find out about it, what do you typically do?
So we have kind of different arms of the organization, right? So we have a campus rights advocacy team who will intake the incident, review it. They may contact the university, the college or university, directly with a letter. Other instances, we'll reach out maybe directly to the student group or organization, see if they need advice or help. Our research team will kind of independently evaluate this and see if it meets the inclusion criteria for the databases where we track censorship attempts on campus and what their outcomes are. And so we'll intake it in kind of that separate way. The campus rights advocacy team is a part of that review process. So there's always a lawyer in there with the researchers, making sure we're following the law correctly. And you know, this is a violation of First Amendment rights.
And Sean, since Charlie Kirk was assassinated, have you noticed any changes in terms of campuses being more welcoming to diverse viewpoints?
Some narrow.
Or is it too soon to tell, maybe?
It's probably too soon to tell. I mean, there's some narrow cases where there's some good examples, and then there's other campuses where it effectively doesn't look like much has changed. I'd say so. Sorry to say that. Too soon to tell, but I wouldn't necessarily. I think not much is necessarily going to change.
That's disappointing because you would think that a horrific event like that from somebody who was on campus challenging views and having debates and everything else, it would lead to more debate. You would hope it would lead to more debate. But I would imagine a lot of colleges probably look at that and also say, oh, we got to clamp down on controversial speakers because look what could happen.
The security concerns get referenced now and things like that. I will say one of the positive examples that I can point to is we do have data from Utah Valley University collected after the assassination. We did a sample of a little over 2,000 students nationwide, and we oversampled students at Utah Valley. And I mean, look, not surprisingly, they're on edge about things like going to public events, walking to class, things like that. To me, seems like a rational reaction to possibly even witnessing the shooting, let alone having it happen on your campus. But there was also a lot of positive signs in the data in terms of shifts in tolerance, shifts away from saying it's okay to use violence to stop a campus speech among students of all political leanings. So I think there's some positives in there with some of the understandable negatives.
Because, you know, I mean, the whole keeping everybody safe on campus thing has been a scam the colleges have used for a long time to try to stop controversial speakers. You know, they'll say that they can't keep the speakers safe or they can't keep the students safe. And really, that's just a heckler's veto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. That's why we write letters about these things effectively. Like, you will see, it's not just, oh, well, security concerns. No, what you'll also see is these underhanded ways of putting it on the student group itself. It's, oh, well, if you want to pay for the fees, sure. And they're $20,000. And what student organization is going to really come up with it without outside
that's
help?
Ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, we got to have extra campus cops in there, so you're going to have to spend extra money. Sean Stevens is with us from the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. He's chief research advisor at FIRE. Now, when we're looking at the political spectrum of things, is it more speakers that lean to the right that get canceled, or is it even, like, what's kind of the breakdown in that ideologically?
Well, so, yeah, if we're talking just kind of invited speakers and events like that to campus, you're going to see it happen more to speakers on the conservative side of the spectrum. When we expand that net to look at faculty, student groups, individual students, student organizations, the story gets more nuanced. A lot of faculty are on the left. So while they might get targeted by people further to their left, they also get targeted by people on the right. There's a wave of that after the Charlie Kirk assassination where, I mean, my advice to a lot of those people would have been, you don't have to put these comments on Twitter and you could save them privately to your friends, but still in most cases, protected speech. So we would defend it as you know, for our organization's purposes. And then with students, it's like a mixed bag where, you know, the two most targeted groups in our student database are Turning Point USA and Students for Justice in Palestine, who don't have much in common other than, I would say, that.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, but it makes sense, though, right? It does make sense in that sense. Now, from the university's perspective and college, when they're dealing with these situations and they get a letter from FIRE, are they worried about lawsuits? Because you guys also do have a legal arm, correct?
Yeah, we do. We use that more sparingly. I think we try to keep our powder dry a lot of times. We've done more public litigation kind of off campus recently on things. We've found the letters to be effective. Letters combined with media pressure, you know, drawing attention to the event is a fairly effective way. Some universities respond and it's, you know, fairly easy to get them to correct course. Others will respond with, you know, objections and disagreements, and we might have letters going back and forth. And, you know, there's others that ignore the letters for sure. But I think we prefer to reserve the heavier hammer of the litigation for more specific cases.
And the last question I would ask you is, I know every year you guys do a breakdown of the colleges that are the best and the worst when it comes to free speech.
Yeah.
And have you had any insight into that yet? Because I think like Harvard was the worst, right? If I remember correctly, last year, or one of the worst.
Yeah, so we have two different, there's kind of a year-end list, or early in the new year, we put out kind of like the 10 worst, like most censorious, you know, schools or whatever. But then we also have our college free speech rankings, which come out every fall. And so there, in the rankings themselves this year, the five worst were Columbia and Barnard were at the bottom. Barnard was worst, Columbia was second worst. And then you had Indiana, you had Northeastern, and you had Washington University as your bottom five. Your top five in our rankings, and I would stress that even those had definitely a lot of room for improvement, but they are, you know, relative to the other schools, the top. We had Claremont McKenna, small liberal arts school in California. Number two was Purdue. Then we had University of Chicago, Michigan Tech, and the University of Colorado Boulder. Those are your top five. Michigan Tech, UChicago, Purdue, CMC, and even UC Boulder, consistently strong performers in our college free speech rankings relative to other schools. And a handful of other schools routinely finish kind of in the top 15, top 25 or so, which, if you think about it like college football, if you're doing that year after year, I guess that's pretty good.
I said last question, but actually one more question. Sure. I think you guys also put out a study recently, if I'm not mistaken, that said that more and more young people today are okay with things like hate speech laws and censorship. That scares me. That really does. That scares the hell out of me that people are becoming complacent with this notion of saying that we should be able to limit speech in the name of people's feelings or anything else. And it seems like a lot of young people are open to more ideas of that, these kind of totalitarian ideas, while also identifying as socialist, which I guess maybe is not that crazy, since in socialist countries they don't have a great free speech track record. But is it getting better or is it getting worse?
The trends in our college rankings data are down, so not getting better. I'm interested to see what happens this year, though, like we were discussing earlier in the aftermath of the assassination. We've, over the last few years, been tracking an increased number of students saying using violence is acceptable to stop a campus speech. I would expect that not to continue to increase, at least this year, hopefully, with what's happened. But we'll see. You know, but yeah, the long-term trends that we've been documenting since 2020 on that front aren't in the direction you or I would like to see.
It's a shame. Well, keep up the good work. Keep us posted. We always appreciate the work you guys do over there at FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. And I would always encourage people, if you have any issues or if your kids have any issues on college campuses or anything else, reach out to FIRE or anywhere free speech is threatened, because they'll be all over it. So go to thefire.org. Sean Stevens, thanks so much for joining us today on Talk Radio 1210. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, so we got cannabis, we got transgender policies by the administration. They're going after that, and AOC saying she would hammer J.D. Vance. The president giving out military bonuses last night. We got a lot. We got to get to. So we're gonna continue along with that. And tomorrow, of course, is the big day in Cape May. Top story of the hour brought to you by Dr. Mike Veneri of Veneria Dental. Go see him today for your perfect smile. Two locations to serve you, Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Dr. Mike is the man. He's going to give you the great smile that you deserve. He's my dentist, so you can trust him, because I would never go to a dentist who is not the best of the best. So there you go. I was talking today to my buddy Brian Krieger from Tri-County, Tri-County Auto, our official car sponsor. And I was saying to him, hey, Brian, my wife's lease is coming up on her Volvo. And we were thinking about, you know, we need another family truckster kind of car, 7-passenger, because, you know, we need the 3 rows for the kids, because when you wind up carpooling and shuffling kids all around, and it's just one of those things where you got to make sure you got a lot of room for their friends and everybody else. So he's like, oh, check out the Toyota Highlander, the Grand Highlander. And it was a car that I'd never really thought of before. And I looked at it and I said, wow, this is beautiful. I don't know if we'll go in that direction. We might go in the Jeep Wagoneer direction, because I'm a Jeep guy. I don't know. We'll see. But either way, great specials at Tri-County Auto. Great specials. And right now, during Toyota-thon, you see all those commercials, right? They got wonderful deals on the 2025 RAV4 LE all-wheel drive for just $299 a month for 39 months. They also have a 2025 Tacoma four-wheel drive double cab SR5. Can lease that baby for $229 a month for 39 months. And if you want to go with Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram, well, at Tri-County, they have great specials with you at the wrap-up-the-year sales event, which is going on right now. Lease a new 2025 Jeep Grand Cherokee Altitude X for just $363 a month for 36 months. If you want something bigger, you get a new 2025 Ram truck, 0% financing for 72 months, or a new 2026 Ram truck, 0% financing for 60 months. Just stop into the showroom today to see them. They're right off of 422 and easy to get to from wherever you are. And great people. Brian, his general manager, Jack, is a great guy. The sales team, they're with us every step of the way. You'll see the gigantic American flag between the two dealerships. And really, whether it's leasing, whether it's buying, whether you want to go to a pre-owned car, they have amazing deals and amazing specials. And now is the best time to go. Because at the end of the year, you got the new models coming in, so then you get great deals on the older models. I mean, older, it's 2025 cars, are not that old, but you know what I mean. It's just a great time to go buy. These year-end specials are amazing. So find a day between now and the end of the year to pop in and say hello. You'll never get any pressure. You just go and look. Say, hey, I want to come in. You know, I heard Rich talking about you guys. I just want to see what you have. Or go on their website, tricounty.com. See the inventory, see the specials, and you'll understand firsthand why I am so proud that they sponsor our show. And don't forget their amazing work they do with our veterans. Brian and Cheryl Krieger donated a beautiful white Jeep Wrangler to the Travis Manion Foundation for the use of all their programs. It's a beauty. Beautiful, beautiful car. They're so happy about that. And I was just touched by the generosity of Tri-County donating that beautiful Jeep to the event. So to the cause. That's the kind of people they are. Good, solid people who care about the community and will take great care of you. Tri-County Toyota and Tri-County Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram. Tri-County.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So we got cannabis. Cannabis is we're going to be increasing medical marijuana and cannabis, cannabidiol research. That's what the president announced earlier today at the White House. I watched it, and yeah, there's a lot of people who are very, very excited about this, as you can imagine. And we'll give you some audio on that as we continue along the show today. In fact, let's start with President Trump making that announcement from the Oval Office. It was about, 1 o'clock or so that he made the announcement. And we'll start with that. Cut number one.
Today, I'm pleased to announce that I will be signing an executive order to reschedule marijuana from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3 controlled substance with legitimate medical uses. We have people begging for me to do this, people that are in great pain. For decades, this action has been requested by American patients suffering from extreme pain, incurable diseases, aggressive cancers, seizure disorders, neurological problems, and more, including numerous veterans with service-related injuries and older Americans who live with chronic medical problems that severely degrade their quality of life.
And he continued by saying that he wants to emphasize that this is not legalization of marijuana in any way. But, I mean, the reality is it is legalization of marijuana. It's just, it's legalized in the states, as it should be, in my opinion. I've always said this is a states' rights issue. How the federal government got in this game, it goes back to FDR, actually, is where it all started. Shockingly enough, I know. And then Nixon doubled down on it, but if a state wants to legalize marijuana, by all means, they should be able to. And that's something the president has agreed with as well. It's still technically not legal on the federal level. That's stupid. They should just make it legal on the federal level just to make it consistent with state law, or just get the federal government out of it. And then if the state legalizes it, then if you don't like that, then work to change the policy in your state. I mean, that's why states are supposed to be laboratories of democracy. And that's not me advocating people to use it. I'm just saying it's just you have this hodgepodge right now where you've got states that have it legal. And it's still technically illegal on the federal level. And you could theoretically one day have a showdown between the feds and the state on an issue that they're acknowledging has benefits for people that, you know, they're using for medical research. So and I also get it, too. I mean, he's saying this because there are a lot of people that are very, very anti-marijuana. I'm kind of indifferent on it, to be honest with you. I don't use it. It's not my thing. But there are people that are like very anti-marijuana, and they don't want to hear that it's legal. But they're probably living in a state where it is, or at least it's decriminalized, or at least they can use it for medicinal purposes. So, I mean, some of that's optics too. But here's Trump on that cut too.
I want to emphasize that the order I am about to sign is not the legalization, or it doesn't legalize marijuana in any way, shape, or form, and in no way sanctions its use as a recreational drug. It has nothing to do with it. Just as the prescription painkillers may have legitimate uses, but can also do irreversible damage and never. If you look at some of the damage that can be caused, wreck lives, and if it's abused, it's never safe to use powerful controlled substances in recreational manners, and especially in this case, if you take a look, illegal and unregulated drugs, very, very bad thing. So I've always told my children, don't take drugs, no drinking, no smoking, and just stay away from drugs. I have been... they would look at me and they said, Dad, would you stop saying that? I would say it every time I looked at it practically. Young Americans are especially at risk, so unless a drug is recommended by a doctor for medical reasons, just don't do it. At the same time, the facts compel the federal government to recognize that marijuana can be legitimate in terms of medical applications when carefully administered in some cases. This may include the use as a substitute for addictive and potentially lethal opioid painkillers, and they cause tremendous problems. Yeah. This can do it in a much lesser way, can make people feel much better that are living through tremendous pain and problems. 40 states and multiple U.S. territories have already recognized the use of medical marijuana. This reclassification order will make it far easier to conduct marijuana-related medical research, allowing us to study benefits, potential dangers, and future treatments. It's going to have a tremendously positive impact, I believe.
I think it's also worth noting that there are a lot of things that doctors prescribe children that are not good for children. So, I was reading a story the other day about how a lot of the drugs that they give kids now for ADD, I mean, not now, they've been giving it to them for decades, but, you know, Ritalin, Adderall, these other drugs, Concerta, whatever, they become gateway drugs for other mental health drugs. Like this article, and it said, you know, we gave kids medicine for ADHD. Then we realized that the drugs were making them depressed. So then we gave them an antidepressant. Some of the drugs the kids couldn't sleep, so we gave them sleeping pills, or we gave them Valium to help them relax. And then it's not as simple as just, oh well, if a doctor says it, then take it because it must be safe. And I think we're waking up to that. I would like us to wake up to that a little bit faster, personally. Because I still think we're over-prescribing kids. I still think we don't know the links between psychotropic medication and kids and violence and school shootings and things like this. One thing I can tell you, I will go to my grave believing that kids don't shoot up schools because they watch or play violent video games. I've had this debate many times over the years. Because I played violent video games, and I don't believe it's because kids watch violent movies, but I do wonder about those kids and the kind of drugs they take. And I also wonder about the kind of drugs they take because they're, you know, you've had this situation where you've had some of these shooters, excuse me, have been transgender. And what drugs were they taking, and what were the effects of that on the levels of violence? So, you know, there's a correlation here with aggression and these drugs. A lot of these stimulants cause aggressive behavior. A lot of the antidepressants cause aggressive behavior. And, you know, one article I read in the Wall Street Journal about this, it was like this one kid, you know, gets diagnosed with ADD, and they give him Ritalin, and then it's like he winds up on seven other psychotropic drugs to deal with the effects of that drug, and then he's in another drug for that drug. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy town. And I was really hoping that by now Kennedy and McCrary and, you know, we would get some more insight into all this. But, you know, when the president says, unless the doctor says to take it, I don't agree with that. I think the problem is we have too many doctors who are willing to just write scripts, especially when it comes to kids, and especially when it comes to psychotropics. And we don't even know if these drugs really do anything. You know, we really don't. There's a lot of debate on whether or not depression is even really something that is a result of a chemical imbalance. You know, that's a debate. That's a theory. It's not necessarily something you've proven. You don't take a kid and put them through a brain scan like you would to test their heart or something like that. You write them a script and you send them out the door. And then how much of these drugs lead to isolation? We keep talking about devices and isolation. But, you know, like, my son's got an Xbox. He's not on any drugs. He plays with his friends all the time. He goes, rides bikes. He goes sledding. He's doing all those things. How many of these kids are isolated from their peers? And we're quick to assume it's because they're on a screen. But what if it's the drug? What if it's because they're on some sort of a stimulant that it makes them antisocial, or they don't want to be around people? They feel like they've lost their personality or whatever it is. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. All I know is I would like to have a greater conversation around all that. And I was really hoping by now we'd be having that conversation. We're a year in. We're really not. We're still at this whole, like, oh, if the doctor says it's okay, well, then take it. You know, otherwise, don't take it. I mean, like, that's not okay. We got to get to the bottom of this, particularly when it comes to the overprescribing of medication with kids. I mean, I could already tell you, you know, with my 5-year-old, who's me, literally just a mini version of me in a dress. When she wears a dress, she's like a little tomboy, my daughter. But Reagan, you know, already the teacher made the comment about, well, you know, you want to get her, you know, talk to a pediatrician about getting her evaluated. It's like, we're not going down this road because my daughter can't sit still in class. Like, I couldn't sit still in class. Like, I think it has become all too easy in this day and age right now to just pop a pill and here's your miracle cure. And what I worry about with this whole thing with marijuana is it's not that I'm anti-cannabis. If it can help people, great. But what I'm worried about is Big Pharma gets their hooks into it. Then they start making pills. And then we move people from one set of pills to deal with their emotions to another set of pills to deal with their emotions. And I'm not talking about things like PTSD and other things like that. I want to see all the research in the world done on those things. You know, somebody's in war and is seeing people shot up around them and has post-traumatic stress disorder. And if mushrooms can help them, if LSD can help them, if pot can help them, whatever helps, great. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the everyday person who's dealing with sadness and anger and depression and all the other things that are human emotions that we, you know, here's a pill. And are we going to simply turn around and realize in, you know, 5 years from now that it's, well, here's the pot pill for the kid who can't sit still in class? So we went from Adderall to cannabis, and people go, well, you know, it's less addictive, and so that's good. But is it? I don't know. You know, I'm not sure about that. I'm open to the research, and I'm excited at least for doing that, and that's a good thing. And on that point, here's Secretary Kennedy talking about that cut 25.
I'll just echo, thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for your leadership and vision and finally getting to closure on this issue. This is a question, a scientific question, that has divided our country for many, many years. And there are valid claims on both sides. On one side, patients and physicians attest that cannabinoids and THC can be have miraculous effects on chronic pain, on epilepsy, on PTSD, on chemotherapy-induced nausea. My friend Howard Kessler, without whom we wouldn't be here today, has drove this change in the schedule. But he did it because of his own experience in mitigating the impacts of chemotherapy. There's nothing to gain from this. He just saw something that worked for him, that worked for thousands of other Americans, and he wants to make it available to them. On the other side, there are valid claims about the negative impacts, about addiction, about psychosis, about adverse public health impacts, and impacts particularly on young people. So we haven't the evidence on all of these is anecdotal and it's hypothetical because we have not been able to do scientific studies. There is no standardized dosing. And if you don't have standardized dosing, any study that you do is comparing apples to pears. And we don't know the difference between botanicals and synthetics. And all of these questions we're now going to be able to answer. Five administrations have promised to act on this issue. The Biden administration promised to do this, and the proposal began during the Biden administration. It got mired down in the chaos and inertia and disorganization. And I want to thank President Trump, who made the promise during the 2024 election that he was going to come in and solve this issue, that he was going to take decisive action. And he has kept that promise today. And so thank you, for President Trump, for your vision. And because of that, we will have answers very soon. This will finally allow us to study this issue and to answer these questions for the American people.
And these questions should be answered. And I'm glad they're going to do the research. I think it's really, really important. And he points out that 82% of people want this, and I agree. I want this too. I want federal research into marijuana. I've long said that, and psychedelics and psychotropics. You know, Rick Perry, former governor of Texas, has been leading the effort on this. I think there's great developments that could be done with this. Ketamine, all kinds of different things. A lot of this has been stifled by big pharma lobbying, because if they can just get a pill and, you know, it's like what the president said, well, if a doctor says to take it, take it. Well, you know, that's the problem, is that you have these other substances out there that might bring great relief to people, but they're not going to take it when you can give somebody whatever antidepressant that's been on the market for 20 years. And what's really been the success rate of those things in reality? I mean, has it made us a happier country? You know, you've got, I mean, just tens of millions of Americans. And I'm not shaming or judging or in any way, shape, or form. I'm just simply saying, has it resulted in people actually being happier? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's severe mental illness where there's severe, like, it has to be treated by certain kinds of drugs or people will lose their freaking minds. I don't doubt that. But in terms of the everyday human experience of dealing with of just, you know, the pain of losing somebody, the pain of losing a job, the fear of starting a new business, whatever it is, all these different things. And, you know, wondering whether or not a pill becomes the answer. And then when you get into more complicated things like pain, and obviously we have had a terrible track record with dealing with this because of the opioid epidemic. You know, we thought opioids at one point were going to be the game changer, and Pharma lied about how addictive they were. We all know that by now. Purdue Pharma lied about that. If you've not seen Dope Sick, I highly recommend it, or read the book. It's great. It's fantastic. Purdue Pharma lied. A lot of the pharmaceutical companies lied about that. They knew these drugs were addictive. They lied about it. But for a lot of people, let's just be honest, Advil, Tylenol, it's not cutting the mustard for the kind of pain that they have, or if they're going through cancer, or if they're going through something else. It's just not, it's not helping them. So, you know, if this helps, great. I'm all for it. Fantastic. I think it's important. Here's the president, cut 26.
Some GOP lawmakers have written to you in recent days saying they're concerned this executive order could normalize drug use for youth. How would you respond to them?
You're talking about this particular today? Well, I think I'd let one of the doctors respond to it because they can do it a lot better than me. But I can only tell you that when you see polls of 82% of the people want this, when I have friends that are really, really sick and they've gone through, I guess you could say, unfortunately, I don't want to become too involved in it because I don't want it happening. But these are people that really know what's going on. Very smart people. This is one of the most successful people in the country and a very brilliant guy. And when they go through this horrible ordeal of cancer or other things and they realize that this is something that makes them feel better without all of the side effects of some of the drugs where you're just totally knocked out and out of it. But I'd like to have one of the doctors maybe respond because you people do it better than anybody.
I'm happy to respond. Yes. I mean, and my answer is we have had cannabis scheduled for how long? And it hasn't protected neither the adolescents nor the adults. We have 20 million people in the United States with a cannabis use disorder. This is not legalizing it. It's making easier to do research so that we can use it when it is indicated and optimally.
So it's also a big part of this is research. In other words, you'll now have a much larger sample and you'll be able to see if it's as good as many people say it is. I mean, people say it is beyond good, and you'll be able to find that out now.
All right, so we got to take a break. We got more to come as we continue along the show here today. And don't forget, Friday, tomorrow is Friday, tomorrow, Cape May. We're going to be there. It's going to be fun. We're going to be live. We're going to be have a great show and a lot of fun. So make sure you join us for that, all right? And, yeah, we'll do that. Let me tell you about Emmons Roofing and Siding. Winter is here. Snow on your roof everywhere. What are you going to do, huh? What are you going to do when it comes to your roof? You're going to reach out to my friends at Emmons Roofing and Siding. That's what you're going to do. You're going to reach out to them and have them give you a free roof inspection and make sure that you are ready to go this winter. If you've had any leaks, call them. They'll get out there. They'll help you. They'll take care of you. They'll do a great job. I've used them for 12 years in two different homes. And the thing about Emmons that I love is, A, they use American-made roofing products. That's number one. And American-made siding, American-made doors and windows. So I love that. And B, what I love about Emmons is they stand by their work. Now, they're platinum certified by Owens Corning. Platinum certified Owens Corning shingle, the best in the business. When you get that platinum certification, what that means is that means that they have a lifetime warranty on not just the material, but also on the workmanship as well. So you're covered. You are absolutely covered. And they don't just hand that designation out. They even do spot checks on their contractors to make sure that they're holding up to those high standards of being platinum. So that's what you get with Emmons, and I want you to reach out to him today. All right? You get a free roof inspection. If you need a new roof, you get that lifetime warranty on it. But also, you can increase your protection and peace of mind with your home with Anderson Windows, CertainTeed Siding, and they do kitchen and bathroom remodeling as well. And I can't believe it, but a couple weeks from now, they'll start the renovation of my kid's bathroom. I'll show you pictures along the way. We'll do the whole thing, the horror show that it is today, and what beautiful thing that they're going to have for us, because I know the design team at Emmons has already come up with some great concepts. We're really excited. I think they ordered all the tile and the fixtures and everything else. So I just said, let's not break ground until after Christmas between my parents being here and the new puppy being here. I've said, why don't we wait till, you know, January? So we're going to do it then, but it'll be an exciting improvement to our home, and it adds the home's value. And I know they'll do a great job because they remodeled the kitchen and bathroom in my old home, and Bridget was thrilled. So happy wife, happy life. They serve Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and the Jersey Shore. They'll take great care of you, and you will be thrilled with the work. EmmonsRoofing.com, EMMONS, EmmonsRoofing.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Thank you, Justin. There we go. Little Dino. My favorite Christmas song. One of my favorite Christmas songs. I can't say a bold declaration like that, but it's one of my top five for sure. Marshmallow World. Just great. Fantastic. And, of course, Dean Martin was drunk when he sang it. Although there's some controversy whether he really was such a big drinker, if it was all kind of an act. I don't really know. Who knows? But either way, thank you for that. What else you got in the queue for the rest of the show?
I'm thinking a little bit more Dino in the 5 o'clock hour. I might roll it back to some, I'm thinking maybe an Eagles Christmas song in the 6 o'clock. We'll see how we're feeling.
Very nice. Very nice. You know, Joe Biden went to the Eagles game and was expecting to hear Don Henley sing.
Did you see he wore the...
it's not a funny joke, by the way.
The Super Bowl hat of the Super Bowl that we lost to the Chiefs?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's not a funny joke to say Biden went to see the Eagles and thought he was going to hear the band. Like, that's not funny. I'm sorry, but it's not funny. And my friend Frank said that. Frank Troy. And I think it's lame. And then Fela said it, too. And got like 50,000 likes on X. I'm like, it's not a funny joke. Biden went to the Eagles game and it was expecting to hear them play Paradise, like Hotel California. It's like, oh, okay. That's not that funny. I'm sorry, but actually it angers me. That joke, it angers me.
I didn't think it was half bad. I mean, 50,000 seems a bit much. I don't know if I'd encourage it that much, but it's not bad. I've seen worse.
Well, my idiot friend Frank put it actually in an email. He actually wrote it in an email to somebody in response to their thoughts on the Eagles and said Zioli was expecting to hear Don Henley play at the Eagles game. How dumb is that? That's just amateur hours, what that is. So, what else do we got? We got, AOC. Yeah, AOC running around and saying that she would beat J.D. Vance. Yes. Yeah. Looking all sexy. No, I don't. No. There are some people that find her to be attractive. I'm just not one of them. What do you think, Justin? Do you find her attractive?
Tell the truth, Justin. You tell the truth.
Matt, would you like to explain what happened while Rich was making that joke? While Mitch was talking about that,
he sheepishly raised his hand. He definitely thinks she's attractive. She is attractive.
Oh, I will. I won't even say sheepishly. I immediately threw my hand in the air.
Oh, okay. He's not even hiding it.
All right, so you think she's hot?
Yeah, I do.
She is good looking.
Matt, I'm asking a guy who's into girls.
Okay? How dare you?
I also find her attractive too, but the teeth though. Like, she could use Dr. Veneria for those horse chompers of hers, don't you think?
Yeah, it's, I mean, but hey, everybody's got their imperfections. I can look past it.
That's very nice of you. It's very kind of you to look past the imperfections.
She's definitely, well, she's got to be in the top three best looking members of Congress. I mean,
dude, that's not saying much.
Well, I mean, she's up against
the talent pool you're dealing with there.
She's up against Rosa DeLauro, but still.
She's up against a 102-year-old woman with purple hair. I'm just saying. It's either her or it's...
Anna Paulina Luna is probably tops.
Anna Paulina Luna is probably number one. For sure.
The AOC's got a solid case for number two.
I was going to say, I think that's an easy...
Lauren Boebert, I feel like people would put her in contention, though not my cup of tea.
Nor mine. No, and I feel like you'd come home and there'd be a bunny on the stove, and you know what I mean? Like, that's not going to work out well for anybody.
Maxine Waters up there.
Well, I mean, Maxine is...
Nancy.
Obviously the gold standard.
Nancy Pelosi, all that money, that makes her a little attractive.
Yeah, I know. I'd say $400 million makes a woman attractive. I would definitely be one of those guys who marries a 107-year-old woman worth $400 million and be like, oh, it's love. Oh, it's love, baby. But then it would kind of be like that situation in Kingpin, you know, with the landlord.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, oof. That would not be good for anybody. Oh, they're making speaking of beautiful women, they're making a Melania Trump movie that's coming out.
I think it's already out, isn't it? Or no, the trailer was released.
We should grab the trailer for that for the 5 o'clock hour. I would go see that in 3D.
But I don't think it is. It's not Avatar.
I would go see that in IMAX. IMAX 3D is what I would see for that.
I think it's an Amazon production, so you may be able to just stream it.
Wait, Amazon did the movie about Melania Trump?
I think it's like an Amazon MGM Studios production. They recently purchased
it. They say it'll be in theaters on, I think it's...
January 30th.
January 30th, yeah.
What is the latest on the excuse me, Netflix, Warner Brothers, Paramount fiasco?
I believe the Warner Brothers group said they were going to reject Paramount and go with Netflix. Or at least they were imploring shareholders to go with the Netflix offer, even though it was for less money.
It was for less money, though,
but
right?
I think there were, like, guarantees in the Netflix deal where they would still release films in movie theaters, which was big for them. It sounds like Netflix is going to be the winning bidder.
Yeah, what concerned me about that was the movie theater factor, because I do like going to movie theaters, but more importantly, I do not want to see vacant movie theaters, because that is a whole lot of real estate space that will become just, you know, the big boxes that no longer pay property taxes. For all the people that are like, oh, I hate Hollywood and everything like that. Well, you know, a big movie theater at the malls are already dying. For many, the movie theaters are part of the only reason why people are even going anymore. So
yeah.
If everything goes to home streaming, then, you know, goodbye to that tax base right there. So people have to remember that. So.
Plus, movies are just better in the theater with an audience.
I
like experiencing the film surrounded by other people, especially comedies. They're way better with an audience.
No, I don't like to be surrounded by other people. That's why I like to go when no one else is there. I don't like being in a movie theater with other people, because then you got people look at their phones. People talk. I get annoyed.
No, the movie theaters now are fine, even if they're filled, because you've got those big, luxurious reclining seats. So even though everyone is in there, it's not like you're, you know, rubbing elbows with them. You've got enough space.
I'll go to a 9 o'clock show. I'll get the cheap $8 seat, and I'll have the whole place to myself. Put my feet up, crack open a bottle of wine.
Where are you getting the wine from?
Smuggle it in.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.